Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we have an interview with Shelley Mazenoble. We talk about getting the PC party together, and finally, we discuss RPGs for the casual gamer and kids. Again, welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of RPG Circus. My name is Jeff, and joining me as normal is Mark. Zach had something come up and was unable to join us this week. As a matter of fact, we are going to be recording this episode just a little bit early, so those of you listening might notice it out a day early, because Mark is actually going to be moving here soon.
And yes, I am.
Yeah, so, but fear not. We actually have a guest host. Stuart Robertson of Robertson Games has decided to fill in. Welcome.
Hey, thanks.
No, no problem. Our pleasure. And, of course, we're going to have our interviewee, so stay tuned. Is there anything we need to go over before I go into the news?
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's do the news then. Well, in the news, first up is the Open Gaming Table Volume 2 is actually looking for some sponsors to help pay for some of the books for the contributors, which is kind of exciting. They actually have some pretty decent, I think they're going to be using Kickstarter? Is that?
Kickstarter.com.
Kickstarter.com to actually try to fund it. They're trying to raise $750, which is sort of exciting. And the way most of the Kickstarter projects work is that they have these different pay levels for different things, and whoever's setting it up usually has some sort of special things. I will, in the show notes, include a link to the Core Mechanic page that explains what's going on with that. I think it's very exciting, and if you are at all interested in possibly making sure there is a Open Game Table Volume 3, I would highly recommend donating some sort of money.
Absolutely.
That's very exciting. Next up, the Roleplay Media Network. This is the one that Baron started a little while back. Its future is a little uncertain right now because Ning, the hosting slash software service for it, is changing their pricing slash service model. Right now, it's running on a free basis, but apparently now they're switching to a complete pay one, and that is going to happen in July is when it's going to be switched over, and then 30 days after that is when, is it July or June? I think I got those confused. Either case, it's either June or July, and then after 30 days after that, anyone who has not paid for their service, basically it goes defunct. So that's it's kind of an up for grabs thing because, well.
They're taking up a collection, or are they just going to?
You know, no word from Baron yet on that one. That's why I say it's a little uncertain. I know some people in the chat room for the Roleplay Media Network. That's an IRC chat room because the Ning chat software kind of sucks. I will have a link in the show notes to that because I wanted to mention that because, well, I'm on there in the mornings, my mornings, you know, Eastern, not Eastern Standard Time, but Pacific Standard Time. I'm on about 4:30 a.m. in the morning. Because that's when I get into work, so nice. I'm on there, and which is, you know, if you're an East Coast guy, that's like 7:30, 8:30. So you're
which is fine.
Yeah, no worries. So I'm on, and so you know I'm there chatting. Stargazer Michael from Stargazer is online there, so that's always cool too. He's all the way in Germany, so God knows what time it is there. Yeah, another actually interesting thing though. I saw this in the RPG Examiner, and there will be a link in the show notes. A researcher, Michelle Drury, from the Middle Tennessee State University Department of Psychology, is conducting a research study to further understand how gaming and social development interact. And she's performing some sort of survey, and she wants about 3,000 people for the survey.
Now, when she says gaming, what does she mean?
This is very interesting.
Candyland, or
this is actually very interesting. She's actually separating the tabletop games from the video games. She wants both. Just it, like I said, look at the article. It's kind of interesting. I'm just finding it interesting that there, people are finally doing research in this area.
Yeah, you know? It's about time.
Yeah, exactly.
There's been a few studies that have come out recently, but they've been, you know, few and far between and often contradictory. So I think more studies is good.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I think we've just finally, I think role-playing games have matured, especially since a lot of people take the video game role-playing games a little more seriously than the pencil and paper ones, which kind of irk me.
Money equals serious.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's just kind of the way it seems to work. Interesting, you know, we've done our review of the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. It seems they've actually come out with their own dice rolling app for the iPhone.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which
really sharp.
Which is really cool because, as some of our listeners will know, is that their dice aren't, I mean, they're standard shaped dice, but they don't really have numbers on them on some of them. Some of them are symbols.
Yeah, they're all symbols.
Yeah, so that's kind of nice that they actually went out and, you know, because we were always worried, like, how are you going to replace these dice? Well, now if you have an iPhone, you don't really have to worry about replacing your dice.
And the
Heroes
absolute,
got fun dice like that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, which actually, you know, kind of puts them a little up on WotC at this point. I know some people are really kind of angry at WotC because they haven't produced iPhone apps.
I think they're a Windows shop because, I mean, making an iPhone app's not a big deal. I made one. If I can do it, I'm very confident that, you know.
Well, you know, I think it's all just a matter of market share. The truth is that as much as I know Mark is an Apple guy, you know, and I'm a Linux guy. I mean, I really don't like Windows per se, but it's still the dominant operating system out there. So, although, and even in cell phones, the truth is that the iPhone still only has about 21% of the market. You know.
Yeah, well, you guys didn't invite me on for the, you know, the iPhone development podcast.
Exactly.
There are tools that let you author for cross-platform, and even though Apple's been a bit touch and go with that, you could use something like PhoneGap to develop it on a PC and deploy it on iPhone and BlackBerry and a bunch of other stuff. So if any RPG developers are listening and you're thinking about mobile apps, check out PhoneGap.
Yeah, I you know, as much as I don't like the idea of laptop sometimes at the table and even the smartphone at the table, I own a smartphone, but I think that's where some of the gaming stuff is eventually going, is definitely for the smartphones in the support area. So in terms of WotC news, there of course has been some restructuring at WotC, and Chris Perkins is now the senior producer for the D&D RPG is the news I got, and I guess there's some other minor reorganizations. He posted a blog about who's reporting to him and everything. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. You know, Chris seems like an awesome guy. I've never actually met him, but I've listened to the D&D podcasts and seen the video podcasts that he's done. And I'm really happy about it.
Yeah. So that's
fine.
Yep. So that's very cool. And lastly, I add this in because a friend of mine reminded me about a game convention. He's all the way in Pennsylvania, and he reminded me that he really missed, because we were in the Navy together and we served in Long Beach at the time, and we used to go to the Gateway game convention, and he reminded me that, hey, is that still in existence? So I looked it up, and lo and behold, not only does it exist, but it's run by a group called Stratacon, I think, is the
Strategicon.
Strategicon, thank you.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce it. But they actually have GameX 2010 happening this weekend of Memorial Day. So if you're in the LA/Long Beach area or the greater LA area and you're interested in doing something, go down to the airport, the airport, because it's at the airport. It's at the Gateway Sheraton.
Sheraton.
There at the airport. I've been there a couple of times, if memory serves me right. And there's some really, well, there's some legends about the elevators there. I'll leave it at that. At least when I went, there was some really stupid things that happened in the elevators. So, so we'll just leave it at that. But that was way back in the early 90s, and I'm sure that none of that happens now. So I think that's it with the news. Anyone have anything else before we go on?
Nope.
I'm good.
All right. Well, today we have a very special guest. We have Shelly Mezenoble. I think I pronounced that again correctly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, no, our pleasure completely.
And you did pronounce it correct. I wish I had a prize for you or something.
Well, you being on the show is prize enough, so thank you.
Aww.
So, Shelley, can you start by giving us who you are and why we should be caring that you're on the show?
Well, I was hoping that you would tell me that.
Shelley wrote a very interesting book that I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the title of that book is?
I can answer that one.
Okay.
Okay.
It's Confessions of a Part-Time Sorceress, and the subtitle is A Girl's Guide to the Dungeons & Dragons Role-Playing Game, which is why most of us just call it Confessions.
Excellent. actually, your book is what got my wife into gaming.
I love hearing that.
She had no interest in gaming beforehand. She just sort of looked at all of my role-playing game books really dubiously, and... Uh-huh. I got her that book. I think I got it for her birthday, which she didn't really appreciate very much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think some people might receive it and think, really? I hope there was a supplementary gift along with it.
Oh, yes, there was.
Okay, good.
And she read it and really liked it and thought she might actually be willing to give it a try. So.
And she did. She tried it
yes.
and liked it.
Yeah, exactly. Now she's as big a gamer as I am.
Which is a wow. better...
Oh, that's awesome. That is a great success story.
Yeah, that's a better exactly. success story than my friend I knew way back when. He married his wife, told his wife he was into gaming. She came home one day and found him on the floor with all these figures on the floor, and she was like, what in the heck are you doing? Because apparently when he told her he did gaming, she thought he meant poker or something.
Oh.
And I think for a while there, she could have dealt with more if he was a poker player.
Yeah.
I know.
Can you have a gambling
problem? It's a sad world.
So what's your job title over at Wizards?
My job title is Associate Brand Marketing Manager.
And what does that mean?
That is a great question. That is, I work on the brand team for Dungeons & Dragons, and along with my boss, we handle all the marketing for all of the D&D products, which includes the RPG and the novels.
Okay.
Well, that's
and anything that you see on the website.
Well, that's a pretty big, big realm there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that get confusing at all?
No, actually, it doesn't, which is good. We work with two different teams for the novels and the RPG product. So it always just look up from the table and see who you're talking to, and then you'll remember what you're supposed to be talking about. That's how we do.
Very good.
That's better than what I do at my job.
Now, in your blog, which is Confessions of a Full-Time Wizard?
Yes.
It sounds like you mostly spend all your time gaming. Is that...
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But for us, that's actually it's part of our job.
That's working hard.
But we. What was that? Sorry.
Working hard, playing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We play in our Tuesday game, and then we just started up a Wednesday D&D Encounters game. So, and those only take an hour. So that's, we do that at lunch. That's just for fun. But the Tuesday game is actually sometimes a playtest, or it's just a part of the ongoing campaign, but it's everybody who is on the brand team. And I feel like D&D is better than like a Myers-Briggs test when it comes to working with people, because it really helps you. I think it has helped our relationship. It's the fact that, we work together as a D&D party and we work together as a brand team. And I think that more companies should employ dungeon masters. They would have much fewer problems.
Well, instead of when you take a company on a company retreat and get them to build a popsicle stick bridges and such things, you have them run through a D&D encounter together and see how that goes.
It's true. It does. It helps you with your working relationships. It helps you understand how people think, and how people are always drawn to certain roles, and you do have to work together. So
absolutely,
I think there's a lot of benefits to it.
Yeah, that would be what I did one time at a company I worked for a group retreat. We went and played golf, and nobody on the development team, this is a software development team, played golf.
Oh, nice.
Just the chief technical officer. He's the only one that played golf. So that's why we played golf.
Nice.
Playing golf when you don't know how to play golf is about the most boring thing you could possibly do.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a nice walk.
Now, for those who haven't actually read your book, how was it that you got into gaming initially?
Well, I got into gaming, other than the typical party games or card games, things like that, I always enjoyed doing, but I got into actual playing D&D from working at Wizards. I never had any contact with D&D before that, at least that I knew of, and I always blame my brother for that because he's older. He's the one that was supposed to be introducing me to these things, and he was really into sports instead. So while I might be able to tell you every hockey team all around the country, I can't. I didn't know anything about playing D&D, so that's his fault. But when I worked at Wizards, I've been there about, I think I just went on 11 years.
Wow.
And I started on the trading card game side. So I was working as a promotions coordinator for Magic. And then after that, I worked on various other trading card games for about the next 5 years or so. And then eventually they moved me over to the publishing team to work on marketing for our children's novels. And it's the same team that does D&D. So that was my first brush with D&D and the people who were working on it. And there was a new game starting up, and there were several new players, so I felt less intimidated about joining because, of course, at this time, I thought, well, D&D is nothing but rules and books and funny accents and costumes, and I felt better about the fact that, A, these were my coworkers and I liked them, and B, several of them didn't know how to play either, so that was my very first brush with it, but I'm telling you, from the just creating my first character before I'd even played her, I was already hooked on it. And it was already much different than I had anticipated the game to be.
Very good.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about gaming. So
Did you have any experience with that, back in the 80s, any of those TV specials or any of that, about the negative side of it? Did that sort of color your perceptions before you got in there?
Well, I didn't think I did, other than the fact that I probably made fun of people, that if I, just accused them of playing it as some kind of an insult. And it's funny because, that's not funny, but I'm a little girl, so what do you expect? But one of my friends on Facebook, I went to high school with him, and we had just reconnected after, many, many years, and he noticed what I do for a living now, and he sent me a message, and he was like, "That's really ironic, because I remember you making fun of me and Justin for playing D&D. I don't personally remember that, but but I believe that I did it. And I, looking at him, at this friend, and the other guy, I'm like, of course they would play D&D. Like, knowing what I know about them now, they're two of the most creative. They're hysterical, they're funny, they're in creative fields, they're both writers, and I feel like." Yeah, we should have known that they would grow up to be D&D players, but of course nobody knew that D&D was actually good for your creativity back then.
Yeah,
and you're reading
it really is confessions, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
It really is confessions of a part-time sorceress.
It is. It's cleansing my soul. I feel so guilty. I should apologize to all of those boys that I insulted.
Now, how long have you been playing now?
About 5 years. So I'm still really new at it.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of gaming overall as a new player?
Well, what's surprising, I thought, was when I was writing Confessions, I thought that women would be really into the storytelling element of the game, so the actual role-playing. And I know that many of them are, but I also know that many men are into that as well. But it was weird in my group. There was three women and there was three men, and the women loved the combat. Like, we would just skip over skill challenges. We would skip over, like, NPCs would be trying to talk to us, and we would just be elbowing them in the face, like, "Get away from me! We got things to do." So, I really like. I don't know what it is, and I think part of it may be, I might be, I feel a little bit insecure. I don't know if you read the last month's column, but I was talking about feeling a little bit insecure as a player, and am I saying the right things? Am I doing the right things? Am I standing in the right mm-hmm. spot? And I feel like a little bit intimidated sometimes by the role-playing aspect. Like, my mm-hmm. characters always tend to be very diplomatic and charismatic, and they should be the ones that are talking, and I'm just kind of like, I feel like, am I metagaming here? Because I'm just standing mm-hmm. in the background, like, you know, kicking dirt, like, oh, I hope they figure this out, and don't nobody ask me a question. But, I, you know, when we're in combat, I feel much more confident as a player. I know what my spells do. I know where I need to stand to, you know, make them hit, and I know that a lot of it's up to the dice. But when you're actually doing, when you're actually talking, then, you know, that's a lot of that's up to you and your character. Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't know, overall, I like the whole social element. I like all of us sitting in the same room talking. I like that we all have inside jokes. I like that, you know, there's that camaraderie between the group. But as part of the actual playing part, I do enjoy the combat part. That's I talk to people all day long. You know, I don't actually get to throw fireballs at them. So I enjoy that.
It's funny you should mention that, because that's really all my wife cares about is the
which
combat.
Part?
The combat.
Really? She, her just, too?
Yeah. She really doesn't care about the intricate plots that I come up with and all the different subtle NPC interactions. She really likes playing wizards who do a ton of damage and just wipe the map of any enemies, and she just likes pulverizing people.
I like that too, so that's why I like playing a wizard. I want to blow up several things at once.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that what we all want to do?
Yeah.
Women like combat, men like, you know, role-playing in stories. And it's exactly the opposite of all the stereotypes. There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd go that
wrong.
Far.
I need to make a retraction. I thought it would be the other way around.
Yeah, I think most people do. Now, you've tried your hand at DMing a bit, haven't you?
I have, yes.
How did you like that?
I liked it. Overall, I liked it. I didn't love it as much when I was DMing for players that knew what they were doing, because I was terrified that they were going to call me out, that they were going to try to do something that I didn't know the answer to, that they weren't going to have fun because they would know better, because all of these people have probably played with really good DMs, and they know what a good DM does, and I wasn't confident that I was doing any of that. Once I relaxed a little, I realized, well, they all just kind of want to have fun. And as long as I can guide them through some sort of idea of fun, they'll probably be okay. But I also DM'd for new people who had never touched D&D, and they were all women. And I loved it. I loved DMing for them, because I realized that as the dungeon master, you have a lot of control over making sure that people have fun. Like, I knew that there were some people that really wanted to beat up things, and they were getting depressed because their dice were rolling really crappy and they weren't hitting anything. And I thought, well, I'm the dungeon master. I can make her hit. I can fudge this a little. And I think that's okay in certain situations. And really the game was supposed to be an introduction. And I thought, if she's just going to roll dice, roll ones and twos, and never hit anything, she's going to leave here with a bad experience of D&D. If she's actually hitting things and killing things and bloodying things, what she clearly wanted to be doing, she's going to have a much better impression of the game. So once I realized, oh, I have more control than just, this is how this monster attacks, this is, you know, what I need to roll to do this, then I was having a ball. Plus, I customized the game a little bit to make them feel more invested in it. Like, instead of this is the game that they were fighting reality TV stars instead of Cobalt. It's just nice. You know, I just played to their personalities a little bit more, and they had a ball. So playing a game, DMing a game like that with, you know, people who maybe are new, people that are okay with having the rules be a little bit more lax, that I think I can handle. Although I am curious to maybe try DMing again, probably outside of work, probably with people who are less invested in the game but are still, you know, avid D&D players. I might feel better doing it that way, but it's definitely interesting. I think there's a lot of pressure on the dungeon master, and if you're up for it, that's great. But I think if you think about it too much, then you'll cave to the pressure like I did, and it won't be fun for anybody.
Yeah. It has to be fun for you too. So
that's true. That's true. Right? And yes, and I notice dungeon masters having fun all the time playing, and I feel like, well, they couldn't possibly have started that way. They must have. I think practice makes perfect, and you have to get comfortable
absolutely
in that role. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. It would be great if all players tried DMing once in a while, because I think it definitely makes you a better player too.
I was about to mention that. That is probably, even if you suck at game mastering, it's worth it to try, because it's going to give you a very unique perspective on what the game master has to go through. And it's going to it will make you a better player. And I think it will make you a little more forgiving of things, because I've met some people that are really unforgiving in everything, and they've never game mastered a day in their life.
Yeah, so, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So now, Shelley, I saw that you were one of the playtesters for this Heroes of Hesiod game that you just came out with.
Yay.
What did you do with that as the playtester?
What did I do when I was playtesting it? Oh, we just, Susan Morris, who was the author of that, she acted as the dungeon master, or the storyteller, I guess, in this case. And we all just took turns playing different characters just to see how it was going to play out. And kind of, we were trying to pretend that we were 7-year-old kids. And it was things like, would they know what this word means? Does this mean, should we rephrase it this way? How can we get them to, move a little bit, understand that they can move around the grid, be a little bit tactical, but not overly so.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest thing was, they didn't change it, but like, if I was a 7-year-old girl, I wouldn't want to kill any of these monsters.
Yes.
I thought maybe we could just like put them to sleep. Maybe.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Put them in the corner, put them in a timeout. but I think that will be up to who's ever running the game for the kids. You could certainly add that element to it if you don't have to actually kill. But the monsters came out a lot cuter than I think any of us.
They are really adorable.
They really are.
Once they get to 0 hit points, maybe they're not dead. Maybe they're just out of the battle, right?
Yeah, exactly. They have to, they're stunned, or put him in timeout, or go in the corner.
Mario's not dead when he runs out of hearts or whatever. He's just, to start again.
Yeah, I think people should feel free to customize it in any way that they want there. The part that I loved was that she ended up giving us candy every time. Like she had, instead of, I'm sure that actually parents are not going to like this idea at all, but we liked it because we were playing at lunch and we were hungry. But she had Skittles that represented all of the monster's hit points so that when you did damage, you got that piece of candy.
Yeah.
And it was very motivating.
Keeps
I'd like to
up.
See that actually incorporated in all of my games.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I could stand the weight gain from all the Skittles and sugar.
That. Well, maybe they don't have to be Skittles or M&M's. But
if you get those Birdie Bots ones, that you're never sure if it's going to taste nice or not. So.
Yeah.
That's true. That would actually be a good one.
All right, well, I think we have just about time for a single more question for this segment before we move on.
Yeah, what do you have that you're working on right now that may have to do with, D&D and gaming and stuff like that?
That I'm working on right now?
Anything?
Oh, yes, I actually am. And I'll tell you, even though I haven't told anybody this before, because this is confessions, right? actually, I don't know if that sounded okay. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. This is not a 900 number.
I've got a second job.
I am... what?
I'm just kidding.
Anyway, I am working on another book that Wizards is going to publish, which is always exciting when you're writing a book, to know that there's an end result. Actually, I should say they're 99% sure they're going to publish it. Anything can happen. But it'll come out next year, and it's another book about D&D, and sort of in the vein of my column, and very much inspired by my mother, who I sometimes write about, but she's becoming more involved in this whole D&D thing, and I don't even think that she's aware that she is, but I'm working on it now, and I have a great editor, so she's helping kind of formulate the whole. We've kind of changed the concept a few times, but I think we've got one that we're very excited about. But supposedly, it's slated to come out in September of 2011.
Oh,
very good. That's your breaking news.
Is your mom a gamer?
No. But she is. She's not a gamer, but she did play D&D once. I made her play it because I was getting sick of hearing her and my dad try to explain what D&D was to their friends, and it was like, well, it's a board game, and everybody has to try to kill each other and steal the princess or something. Could not be further away from what D&D really was. So they actually did play it, and she liked it. She actually was into combat, and my dad was into the role-playing part.
There you go.
That's just so interesting. Okay, well, I believe you said you were going to shuffle off after your segment, unless you wanted to stick around.
I would love to stick around, but as I just confided in you, I have a deadline for the
okay.
book.
Well, we'll let you get your deadline. You know, we're more than excited to see what happens
next
September.
Thank you so much.
September.
This has been really fun.
Well, thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, next up. We've all done it. We started a game, needed to get our players together at the beginning of the adventure, and we begin something a little like this. All of you are in the smelly grease pit dive that serves as a tavern. Each of you see in turn the following, and at this point, of course, you have your players describe their characters. Honestly, we got to do better than that. I mean, how many times have you had a game start with you meet in a tavern? I mean, that's like the classic joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, it almost doesn't matter what genre it's in. I mean, I've played traveler games and you meet at the bar. I've done modern games and, you know, I've done just about every single possible genre. And at least one of those games in that genre begin, you meet in a bar, I swear.
And it reminds me of those, you know, when you were younger and you'd sit around with your friends and you'd say, what do you guys want to do tonight? I don't know.
What do you want to do? Yeah, exactly. You know, I still do that sometimes with some people. It's like, what do you want to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but no, I mean, it amazes me that we've reached the point where we don't really give much thought sometimes. I think that's why I kind of like even, you know, the concept of where Fantasy Warhammer went with the kind of giving the party kind of a character class, you know, give them a reason to be together. Because, I mean, that's the hardest thing. It's like, can you explain why you have, you know, in some cases, what I like to refer to as the five loner characters trying to operate as a group? You know, it breaks something for me. And I'm just like, why am I working, you know, why is the nobleman working with this thief guy? It makes no sense. Oh,
I make the players come up with something for that. They have to explain how they know each other before we finish character generation. So we just skip over that. Yeah. Because I don't want the uncomfortable, you know, stare down in the bar.
Yeah, that, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've had some fun encounters with that in a bar once or twice, you know, depending on the players. Especially, it kind of works okay when there's only like one or two players and you're just really playing that out. Or if you're a game master and you really have nothing and you just want to stretch things out and bore your players to death at the same time.
Yeah. In almost every Star Wars game I've run, it always begins in a bar. And so there was one time where actually I mixed it up a little bit. I told the players before we even began the game, I said, you're going to be the members of a smuggler crew. So you all need jobs where you've been a member of this crew for a while. So all of them came up with different jobs that they had on the ship. So we had a captain, we had an engineer, we had the medic, things like that. And then we did start in a bar, but I started the game in media res where they were standing in a bar. All the tables were all knocked over and everything. They had just finished up with this big fight, this big barroom brawl, and the big bad evil guy came walking in the room. And with a bunch of his thugs. And so it sort of, it began like the second round of combat, though they hadn't even experienced, you know, the first round of it.
Yeah, I remember that from the old Star Wars RPG, and it's always something I try to think, how can you start with something meaningful, you know, not with dithering around talking to a shopkeeper, but, you know, start the game with either a battle or a meaningful decision or just some sort of event that kicks things off. Like if you're watching a movie, you know, an interesting scene and not just something boring.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. The Pathfinder Advent AP, Second Darkness, begins in a bar. It actually begins in a gambling hall. And I thought that was really funny. It's like, how cliche can that be? You know, and obviously combat ensues. None of the players know each other, but combat ensues, and they have to defeat the people trying to steal the prize money for the gambling event or something like that, if memory serves me right. But it's like, okay, that's exciting. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I like if the players actually can think of a way that they know at least one other player. I don't necessarily make them know every single player, but it's nice to know at least one other. Say, you know one other player. And actually, I think there is a couple of game systems that's kind of a requirement of character generation. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I swear there is. There's a couple. I know I've heard of a couple. So,
and I mash things up so much I can never tell what's from what game system.
You know, I can't either. I've read a lot. I have a small collection of games from the 80s. I mean, I have games that some people say never got to print. It's like, yeah, well, I actually have a printed copy, so apparently it saw a print, but it didn't go anywhere. Yeah. And primarily because the rule system sucked, usually. But no, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the classic, you know, almost Star Trek element of beginning in the middle of something. You know, I think that's a very useful tool as a game master to remember that you don't have to begin at the beginning. You know, especially because, and the players have to be okay with that. Some players don't like that. They want to. They're like, no. I would have done this, and this. And it's like, come on, we're just trying to get going. And you know, I think players have to give a little in that regard. But you have to. Yeah, it has to be by agreement, obviously. But,
yeah,
you know,
it's a different style of game. But what I like about those kind of rules is it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're playing, you know, 4th edition D&D or, you know, old 80s Marvel superheroes or something. You know, those are all tips and tricks you can use on any game. So I like those.
Oh, absolutely. That's the beauty of it. You know, game mastering is an art regardless of game system. Mm-hmm. The rules are important, but it's the ability to apply the rules and apply a little bit of storytelling and, in some cases, just plain what I like to call management. You know, in some ways, being a game master is kind of like being a project manager. You know,
project manager / party host /
exactly
referee.
You know, never mind the fact that the game master also has to now run all the NPCs too. That's always a skill that people forget. But, you know, so there has to, I mean, so I really think, you know, people really need to think about this, you know, especially game masters that don't have as much experience, is that you don't always have to begin in a very straightforward way. It's okay if players and some players know each other and some players don't. But, you know, as a side note, probably the hardest thing to do is always, as I find, is when you have a whole bunch of existing players, bringing a new player in. You know, that's kind of you know, and it's like, again, we fall back on this. You guys are in the bar and something happens and you have this new player. Or, you know, I mean, I've seen it as fudged as players go like, oh, new guy, he just, you come. You know, it's like, why do you trust this guy? Well, he's the new guy. Well, that makes no sense. And I've actually game master sessions where that happened. I've played in games where that happened. You know, you're like, you're the new guy. Why do you trust this guy? I don't know. You're just, we need a wizard. I think that, what was it, the movie The Gamers actually had a little joke about that, if memory serves me right.
Yeah,
we
think
introduced
so.
We introduced a new player two sessions ago, and we used the same trick we did for character generation before the session started. I had the players explain where this new guy came from, so I left it for them to sort out amongst themselves how the new player is added to the group.
Well, and that's good because it gives them input. It gives, obviously, the new players some input. into the way things go.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some very useful techniques, and it'll be very interesting to see. So my advice to you guys out there, try a different way. There's many ways to do it. I'd love to hear about other ways that people approach this problem. So, you know, when we get to the comments section and we'll give you the information how to contact us, please send in your comments. I love audio comments. I don't know about you, Mark, but I love them.
I love them. And I really wish we could get more.
Exactly. I mean, you know, some shows probably get enough audio comments that they could do a show of just audio comments. Well, we're not there yet. We'd love to be. So if you have an audio comment about this section or any of our topic sections, go ahead and send it to us. So I think that's about it for that. And we're going to go to our final segment where we have our guest host. And in this one, kind of apropos, considering our interviewee is talking about casual gamers and kids.
Absolutely.
You know, I thought that was kind of an interesting segue where she was talking about what she was, you know, playtesting, and you guys kind of knew what was going on with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was I'd heard about her the game that Wizards of the Coast had just released for younger gamers. And
what is the age target group for that anyway?
I don't have it up in front of me.
Let me see. It's
is it 8?
Go ahead and keep talking. I'll look it up.
Well, it's definitely for younger gamers than most RPGs are sort of geared at today. And back in, you know, the 80s, the books came out and they said 10 plus. And then over time, that sort of shifted to an older demographic. And certainly many of the games that are out today, you know, you couldn't reasonably give that to, you know, a keen 9-year-old and expect them to you know, slog through that and get a group set up. So I thought it was fantastic that Wizards, you know, recognized, sort of like the comic industry, you know, they recognized that, it's a good thing to encourage, young people to be interested in the game or the hobby. And, if they put out some age appropriate, content, then you'll have people who can enjoy it when they're young and, you know, probably keep on having enjoyment of that as they get older.
Yeah. Well, you know, comics are more expensive than games, it seems.
It looks like it's ages 6+.
Yeah. Wow. So even younger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So D&D way back when was 10+. And I remember having lots of conversations with people where they'd say, well, you know, that was over ambitious and you can't really play at 10. And, if you were nine, that was an exception.
I'm here to tell you that's total BS. Third, fourth grade, I started gaming.
All my friends did too. But that did shift over you know, through the 90s and early parts of this decade. And I think it's great to see them come around and say, sure, you know, it's not going to be the same game. It's not going to have that high level of system mastery and, you know, you're going to have all sorts of splat books for an 8-year-old. But certainly... a game with RPG elements could be appropriate for kids who
are... Well, I mean, it's more than appropriate. I mean, kids are already role-play, whether we think about it or not.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, role-playing...
And it comes back to what we consider a role-playing game. I mean, I think some people that are into games like Dungeons & Dragons, they have a more narrow idea of what a role-playing game is. But, you know, ask a kid and... they're all make-believe games that sometimes have dice and sometimes have figures.
Yeah. Right. So, obviously that's a good game for the kids. I mean, what kind of games do you think are out there for the casual gamer?
Well, one of the things I think about casual gaming is if you think about, and again, you know, some people have that very narrow idea of what a role-playing game is, but if you look at some of the more complicated board games, like something like Arkham Horror, if you play that and everyone sort of gets into their character and you know, you take your time to read the cards, I mean, that's going to play out very much like the kind of role-playing game.
Right. It sort of is.
Yeah. And games like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and, you know,
House on Haunted Hill, is that right?
Betrayal at... I get the movie and the game mixed up.
Yeah. Also, Descent.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a really good one.
I don't think I've ever played that one.
That one is basically just a dungeon crawl, and one person is playing the overlord, quote unquote. And basically, instead of it being sort of the game master working with the players, their job is to beat the players, and the players' job is to beat the overlord by completing the adventure.
Interesting. That's kind of like what the early days, what many game masters did when they didn't know better.
Exactly.
Now, what's interesting about those examples, you might show up at someone's house for a game night or whatever, and they would get out the box and they would take it out, and the person who owned the game would explain it to everyone, and you'd play the game that night. And I think that's pretty important for casual gamers, is that you need to be able to have them show up without having done any sort of prep or any sort of, you know, reading of rules, and you need to be able to take them through the game that evening.
Yeah, that's why that's why I kind of like the Microlite rules for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
I have to say, still my personal favorite Microlite rules to this date is the Star Trek original series one, that where no man has gone before.
Mm-hmm.
That's still my personal favorite. It's so silly.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take itself seriously, and that's great, because they get it. It's like, no one takes the original Star Trek series too seriously anymore.
They shouldn't.
And, you know, it's great fun. I mean, one of my favorite feats is, you know, they have a red shirt class, and one of the feats for the red shirt class is the ability that if your character dies, next week you come back with a different name, maybe a different race, a different ethnicity, but it's the same character.
Nice.
you know, basically you are the red shirt. You die every week, and that's kind of your job. So I think that's kind of funny.
That's what I'd want.
So, I mean, I think if you have like a rules light game like that, that's good for casual gamers. But I think you could probably pull off a heavier game, because if you look at, you know, Descent or Arkham Horror, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't call it rules light necessarily.
Right.
But the players, someone needs to know all the rules, you know, but everyone doesn't. So if you have a group of casual players, as long as you're not dumping too much homework on them before you get started. I mean, ideally you can have people sit down, you can say, you know, give them the 2 minute, you know, talk about what the game's about, and then teach them through playing it. I think that's great for casual gamers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, for casual gaming, you know, either character generation needs to be real easy, or you need to provide them some sort of pre-gens, I think, typically. Because, you know, most games, character generation is complex enough that it can easily eat 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if it's, you know, you could take a little bit of time with it, as long as, you know, they're making choices that they can understand. Like, you're not asking them about stats and stuff. You're asking them about, you know, what kind of character do you want? Like, do you want to be an army guy, or do you want to be a doctor, or do you want to be...
Right. No, I agree with that, because me and my friends tried to play Spycraft. I mean, we played Spycraft a little bit, and that was the most frustrating thing, is that even after trying to read all the rules, sometimes we were like, what feats are what? And it's like, you know, the feat trees got to us, and it's like, okay, this is not a bad game, but this is a tough game to generate characters and play in one night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I can see where, you know, you know, I think either the rules have to support it, or you have to, as a game master, if you know that's what you're trying to do, run a more casual game, kind of limit them a little more.
Yeah, like if you, like, let's say that game Spycraft, and I haven't taken a look at it, but if you decided you wanted to run that for casual gamers, you know, if the system isn't set up to support casual gamers out of the box, then you need to do that work as the game master, and maybe prep some pre-gen characters, and just make sure that when people show up, they can quickly get into the game and learn, you know, what it's about and whether they like it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what type of role-playing game, or what role-playing games do you think are good for casual role-playing games? Like, you mentioned that something like Spycraft, that's a little bit meatier. What do you think are good games that would be better for that?
I think that, I mean, on one hand, you have the system, right? So as long as you're comfortable as a GM and you're not exposing too much of a rules crunchy system at people, it's more important what you're comfortable with. So, I mean, there's games that I find more comfortable, but you know, that might not be the same for everyone. But for the players, I think even more important than the rules system is probably the genre and the setting. If you decide that you're going to do, you know, something that's all about ancient Rome because you love that stuff and you're playing some people that just couldn't care less, I mean, you're not going to get that buy-in if they might prefer Star Wars or something like that. And, you know, if they can immediately, you know, get the setting. I mean, there was an old system, I think it's called, one of these words I've never heard pronounced, but Tecumel. Empire of the Petal Throne.
Oh, yes, I mean.
And old game from the 80s. And apparently it's wonderful, fantastic, but a lot of people found the setting really not friendly, very, very complicated, hard to get into. And but it's supposed to be fantastic, but you've got that high barrier
high
to
concept.
Entry. Yeah. Whereas if you take a game like Star Wars or Star Trek or, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, where people, you know, if you just say the name to them and they have a mental image of what they're supposed to be doing, right? Mm-hmm. So for our current game that we're running, I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different and work in some sort of, you know, weird fantasy, you know, genre mixing stuff. But the first game, it was like, we're playing Wild West. And I just say Wild West and everyone has an idea about what that is and I don't have to give them, you know, sheets of background info. There's some games that I think look really cool, but for casual gamers, I think giving them something like Cthulhu Tech might be a bit tricky because there's a lot of stuff they need to understand before they can sort of feel immersed in that game world.
Yeah, because even the original Call of Cthulhu, I think you could give a real quick, especially if you played kind of during the you know, the Victorian age kind of stuff. It's very easy for a player to get a grasp of that. It's like a Victorian age with some really weird horror, you know, and that's very easy for them to understand.
Or not even that. You just tell them straight up. As casual players, we're playing a Victorian game and there's spooky things. And you know, let them figure it out.
So. Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, so if what would you consider your favorite casual game of the moment then?
Oh, I mean, the rule set we're using, like for our current game, I mean, it's always easy to say, well, the current game I'm running, we're you know, technically the book that sits on the table is Swords and Wizardry and, or, you know, the old, one or two of the old D&D editions. But I mean, we're house ruling it so much. And, I think, outside of combat, you know, you could drop in Savage Worlds or
just
Palladium.
Just about
anything. And so, you know, I think as long as you as a GM are comfortable with it, the only exception might be things like dice. Although I guess that counts too. But whether you want the map and the minis or not, and how long you want to spend focus on different parts of the game. So the current group I'm playing with right now, generally speaking, they want shorter combat. So that's helped pick the system we want to play. Whereas, you know, if that's where people are having the most fun, the combat, you might want, I don't know, Battletech or you know, 4E or something that has a lot of choices to the combat part. It takes longer, but there's more crunch to the combat piece. So that's the only thing about, I think that would, not the only thing, but the most important thing about your system choice for casual gamers. You know, if you know that you're sitting down with a bunch of people who do play heavy board games a lot, you know, you might feel putting the board and the figures in front of them, they'll be able to get that a bit better.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, are there any closing comments before we kind of get towards the end of the show here?
closing comments from me would be that there's a lot more people who are either gaming or that would be open to gaming. If you take a look on somewhere like Facebook, check out the number of Facebook applications your friends are playing. And if you thought they might not be into tabletop games, all those people playing Farmville and Mafia Wars and all the rest of it, to me, it's been quite revealing that there's more potential gamers and future casual gamers out there than I first thought.
That's an interesting point. I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think if anyone has anything to say about anything we've talked about here on this episode, you can always email us at info@rpgcircus.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-643-6322. That is, again, 1-888-643-6322. Or, of course, you can reach us at Skype at rpgcircus, or you can, of course, Twitter us at rpgcircus if you so choose. Please leave us a message. We're always around. Any final closing comments?
No. Thanks to Shelley for being a guest, and really appreciate it, Stuart.
Thanks.
We were short a host, and you pulled through. Thanks.
Thanks. No problem. It was fun.
Oh, I'm glad you had fun. The preceding podcast is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Attribution US license. For more information, go to creativecommons.org.